Vinny, episode 480 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 480. We've got a very special treat for you today. This is FDH managing partner Rick Morris, bringing on an old friend, someone who dates all the way back to the DraftHelp.com days with myself, and who was brought into DraftHelp.com along with myself by the great Nate Noy, now FDH Director of Research. And this gentleman, again, a very, very talented individual, somebody that I am proud to call a friend personally. I am very proud of all that this guy has accomplished. You can check him out, of course, at FantasyAlarm.com. The specific subset site, I can say that, the baseball guys, check that out there. And, of course, you can catch him regularly on SiriusXM. He is co-host of The Drive. You can catch that on Sirius 220 and XM 87 Monday through Thursday, 7 p.m., Friday, 9 p.m., both times Eastern Time, as well as a show on Sunday nights on the channel, 7 to 10 Eastern Time. I speak, of course, again, of my old friend, the great Ray Flowers. A pleasure to bring him to the FDH Lounge today. We've had him on previously on the FantasyDraftHelp.com Insider when it was a standalone show, which has now, of course, been folded into the Nothing Is Off Topic FDH Lounge. And we're breaking down the 2014 World Series today with, once again, my friend Ray Flowers. Ray, welcome back to the show, my friend. How are you today?
Oh, I'm fantastic, Rick. Thanks for having me on. Looking forward to talking with you for a few moments here. And for those people that don't know, based upon anything other for our relationship other than what they just heard, I would like to thank you and everyone there because where I am today started way back in the day with Draft Help, and all the success I have started right there, Rick. So thank you very much, sir.
Well, I always knew that great things were ahead for you, and again, you're somebody who has really done it all himself. Very talented, as I said, individual, somebody with a lot of great insight, and specifically for our conversation today, a little bit of an extra bonus with you being based in the Bay Area. That gives a little bit of extra insight. You've been seeing this Giants team all year long, and I guess I'd like to start with that angle. We've been hearing a lot of media talk about neither team being at 90 wins this year, so it's kind of an interesting kind of anomaly. Only the second time the two wild card teams have made it to the World Series, along with the 0-2 Angels and the Giants. That really wasn't supposed to happen anymore, but in this postseason it has. Now, you've got a Kansas City team where everyone points to the 95 home runs in the regular season. To me, that's just sort of underachievement, essentially, here, that you have an offense that should be much more balanced than that. So, starting with Kansas City, do you share my sense that the postseason power that we've seen with them is just a little bit of progression to the mean, and that they're really more balanced than what they showed us in the regular season?
Yeah, I think everyone, as you noted, Rick, they talk about the lack of power and all the speed. And we've seen the speed on display in the playoffs. They actually stole seven bases in a game against the Giants during the regular season as well. So they've got a bunch of guys that are fleet of foot. But let's just face it here. If we go, you know, position by position kind of thing, you know, Salvador Perez is a guy who could hit 300 in the big leagues. He didn't get there this season. Eric Hosmer might be one of the most frustrating players in baseball the last 2 years. We've seen in the playoffs him be the guy that we think he should be, but he's been really hit or miss. There's been no consistency from him. Cedric Escobar, yeah, he's a nice little player, but, you know, he's not a great hitter. He is more about the speed. Omar Infante, issues with his back, you know, productive, but nothing great. Mike Moustakas is a total disaster. Like, I'm still shocked. He's probably been the worst everyday player in baseball the last 2 years, and, you know, he has the talent. He was a top draft pick, first rounder, all that, and they keep waiting for him to arrive. He really hasn't. You know, in the outfield, you've got Lorenzo Cain, who was the MVP, who's showing his dynamic nature. Aoki's a very good ball player all around. Alex Gordon's kind of the heart and soul of the team. Nothing to say negative with him. And then Billy Butler, he, like Hosmer, had this really disappointing season. But if all those guys are gelling and if they're all on top of their game, that's a lineup, Rick, with tons of talent.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, if somebody would have said 3 or 4 years ago, Royals in the World Series, I think we would have believed it, but it would have looked a lot different in our minds than what we're seeing here. We thought these guys would have been fully actualized, and the fact that they've made it this far without that being the case is really kind of incredible. Now, across the other way with the team that you've been seeing up close all year long, the Giants, isn't it kind of a little bit similar as far as a team needing to count on sort of flashing their best selves? You've got guys like Sandoval and Peavy and Morse, and you see what they can do in flashes at times. But again, they've really been key at different points in the year to the sustained success of this team. Peavy is somebody that they're really kind of leaning on without Matt Cain being in there. So does San Francisco have some of the same kind of dynamic going in terms of guys who can get it done, and that, but they just really need to finish getting it done in the World Series?
You know, Rick, I've been, and you're aware of this, I was born and raised in the Bay Area, so I've been here through the lean times, through the Humbaby stuff, through the struggles and the Barry Bonds, and now to where we're at here. And I was shocked when they won in 2010. I was shocked when they won in 2012. And I'm probably even more shocked now. I mean, there's a core of players that have kind of been there through the 5 years, led obviously by Buster Posey and the coaching staff, you know, with Bruce Bochy. But I look at this team, and it's just like, I don't really know how it's happening. I mean, I got to be honest with you. I mean, you get Travis Ishikawa, perfect example, a guy who misplays a ball, you know, potentially costing his team the game. Then he goes out and hits a game-winning home run. I mean, it's just, you know, he stepped up. At times, Joaquin Arias has stepped up. We've seen, you know, Joe Panik do things. You know, at times, Brandon Crawford has carried the offense. Matt Duffy at times has done something. Suzak behind the plate has been there. It's a collection of players that, quite frankly, are flawed, but when they have been called upon to help, you know, cover the losses of a player like Angel Pagan or Michael Morse or even Pablo Sandoval at times, they've somehow got it done. And the key to everything that the Giants have done is the pitching staff. It's, you know, the key to a lot of teams that have success, obviously, in the postseason. You have the old strategy, the old theorem, you know, good pitching beats good hitting. And the Giants basically have been living off that, because that lineup, it's a rather motley crew, Rick.
It really is. And yet, what's interesting is, compared to the last two World Series teams, better hitting up and down the line, but again, a little bit more of a dearth of starting pitching because Matt Cain's not in there. Tim Lincecum, the last two times around in the World Series, hasn't been the Tim Lincecum of old. So it's kind of fascinating how that's gone. And you pointed out in your very excellent article that you sent to me, I was very glad to see this great World Series preview. People can check out at fantasyalarm.com. Your point in there about the inefficiency of the San Francisco payroll, and that's something they had going the last two times. Maybe that's why it's kind of a head-scratcher to you up close because, again, Barry Zito's not there anymore. But when you look at the fact that Cain is not there to produce in the postseason and on down the line, Brian Sabian kind of strikes me as kind of like a Bart Simpson kind of a character. I meant to do that. You know, I mean, he's got the depth guys in there who saved him. But, you know, one could only wonder what they could do with an efficient payroll. Would they win 100 games year in and year out?
They might. And so you can give credit to the front office for putting together a team that can win despite the issues, or look at the front office and say, hey, guys, you know, are you spending money the most wise way? If you were, maybe we'd be the Yankees West. Four of the top eight Giants in terms of pay aren't doing anything. Matt Cain's gone for the year. Tim Lincecum, you know, banished to the bullpen. He's had a neck situation. Pagan, who I mentioned earlier, starting center fielder and leadoff guy, he's done for the season. Marco Scudero at second base hasn't done anything either. So the Giants are having this success despite not having four of their top eight payroll players even, you know, doing anything, not contributing a single thing, one thing in the playoffs. When they made the trade for Peavy, as a prime example, Rick, that you brought up, I was like, oh man, whatever. You know, it's Jake Peavy for a couple years now hasn't been the same since he came back from his shoulder woes. Tremendous credit to him because people, when he had the procedures done and the issues, they doubted he'd ever pitch again. I mean, it was a significant situation for Peavy, and his mechanics now are hideous. You watch him, and it's borrowed time if you ask me, but he came to the Giants, and he looked like Jake Peavy from 2007. And, you know, the Giants have had the ability in recent years to do things like that, Rick, to bring in that one key piece, to find that one key piece, you know, whether it's, you know, Gregor Blanco or Jake Peavy or Yusmeiro Petit, who's, you know, been so dynamite for them in that swing role. The Giants have done a good job identifying talent, giving it an opportunity to have success when it's not the big name player that they were depending on.
Yeah, and it's really been a remarkable story, as you said, about, you know, the plug-and-play nature of that roster, how they've been able to put guys in there and how they've been able to get it done. Two guys that you had mentioned there with previously with Madison Bumgarner and Buster Posey, it kind of strikes me as being a little bit coincidental that in the year of this grand retirement tour of Derek Jeter, you got two guys who are really kind of, it seems to me, kind of straining to grab the torch from him there. Really the same kind of dynamic, all this big success at the beginning of their careers, and they're sort of the poster children, I think, for this team because they were both rooks in 2010 and helped put the team over the top the first time here. So do you get the sense that as we're going along, particularly if they bring home a third world championship, that they're going to be more widely seen in that way as basically the big winners of this generation, the same way Jeter was for his?
Yeah, quite potentially. Yeah, Rick. You know, you look at the scenario with you know, Buster Posey, and I believe it was Jason Stark who wrote an article about the two guys and said, look, you know, let's compare the two players. And, well, yeah, I mean, they're right there. And, you know, one's a shortstop, one's a catcher, and I'm not talking about defense, but their presence in the lineup, the fact that they showed up and they, you know, helped usher in a totally new era here, it's pretty impressive. And, you know, Buster Posey is the heart of this team. There's no doubt about that. He's got a quiet excellence about him. It's something that sets him apart from so many other players. People just, they follow that guy. They believe in him. And then in the case of Bumgarner, if I'm not mistaken, and this is something that gets totally overlooked, I think Madison Bumgarner is younger than Matt Harvey, as an example. It's just, you know, Bumgarner has been around forever. And because of that fact, people overlook the greatness that he has. Now, there are issues with Bumgarner. You know, there's concerns with Bumgarner. His mechanics haven't been an issue to this point, but he you know, he's a crossbody thrower. At some point, his arm is going to go because his mechanics are not good, despite the fluidity that it looks like. That cross sidewinder nature is one of the reasons why he's had so much success. But yeah, Bumgarner and Posey as a combination, those two players have to be looked at as winners for what that is worth. And I can't think of two other guys in any other organization that have had the level of sustained excellence and success that those two guys have at the start of their careers.
They've really been remarkable. And again, Bumgarner has been so important in San Francisco this postseason because I think that's one of the reasons that you have two wild cards that managed to make it this far, because starting pitching has not really been a big issue with other teams there. The Dodgers certainly underachieved in their series. The Nationals, I don't know that you could put it on starting pitching so much. Those guys, by and large, looked pretty good, but it still wasn't enough. Detroit's starting pitching wasn't quite enough to get it done. So in a year like this, where Bumgarner's sort of like the last ace standing, that's obviously been key to what they're doing. But one of the reasons that this World Series seems so hard to break down for me, and I think probably for a lot of other pundits, maybe yourself included, is just kind of the bizarre nature of it, with both teams being this unbelievably hot, cresting in there from the wild card game, the style of play that Kansas City has that you almost never see in the World Series these days. What we saw in the regular season with San Francisco was a big struggle. Now, granted, it was it was a hot point of the summer for KC and a down point for San Francisco, but those three games don't give you a lot of confidence just looking at them as far as San Francisco's ability to stop the run game. Is there a better sense that you have as far as what the capabilities are going to be in the World Series here and as far as how they're going to try and hold the runners on base and try and control and keep the Royals from going amok on them on the base paths? Do you have a sense that they may have it under better control than what we saw in August?
Well, they got one key taken care of. They're not going to pitch Tim Lincecum. for all the things that even when Lincecum was winning the Cy Young's Award, he never cared about base runners, I don't think. It's one of the reasons why he was successful. He's like, oh, you're on base. You got to beat me with a couple of hits. I'm not worried about it. He's got that long delivery, and it's funky and all that. So that's one of the reasons why any team has had success in years past against the Giants running bases, because he's been out there. The Giants will do what they can. They don't have a backup catcher. It'll be Posey behind the dish every time. Posey's an excellent defensive catcher. There's only so much you can do. It's a numbers game. You know, you see the base coaches, you know, out there at first base, and they're got the stopwatch and they're clicking. It's like, well, if it's 1.6, you go. If it's 1.4, you don't. I mean, it's at a certain level, it's can the guy outrun the baseball? And, you know, a player like, you know, Jerod Dyson, as an example, he can outrun the baseball a lot of the time. So the Giants are going to have to do what they can to slow the opposition down. They're going to have to vary their looks to the plate. You know, sometimes go quickly, sometimes wait 5 or 6 seconds. They'll do that kind of thing. They might even use the pitch out a little bit. Bruce Bochy's not afraid to match wits in that area either. But I think it's important for the Giants to not worry so much about what the Royals can do that they forget what they can do. And we see that happen a lot where teams try to react to what the opponent is doing, and in so doing, take themselves out of their own game. So the Giants will do the best they can, but if the Royals steal bases, the Royals steal bases.
That's a great point, because the temptation in looking at this is to sort of refer to San Francisco almost as kind of the foil in the series here. You know, the Kansas City is going to be the team setting the tone for it. Are they going to be able to establish what they do? And, of course, yes, San Francisco, that's going to be a big thing for the Giants, is being able to establish their own game and not just be concerned with stopping Kansas City. I wonder additionally, too, and this is a tough thing to kind of gauge going in, but I wonder if you have any kind of sense of this, as far as what San Francisco is going to try to do as far as beating some of the defensive shifts that Kansas City has, because their application of the defensive metrics has had a lot to do with their success. They've got guys that can cover a lot of ground, but they always know to be in the right place at the right time. How is San Francisco this year as far as a team that's able to do the Wee Willie Keeler thing and hit it where they ain't?
I love Wee Willie Keeler. Was he 5'4"? Not enough people know who he is. The Giants, I mean, they're a National League team. And so obviously that's always been part of their game there. And Bruce Bochy is, I think, roundly getting the credit he deserves after years of anonymity, you know, both with the Giants and with the Padres. The Giants have a very good pitching staff, and they have a very good plan. And they've got, you know, we talked earlier about the moving parts and how a lot of these guys are disappointments and, you know, they're not great talents. But they've got a lot of professional players. And I think, you know, whether it's Panic or Blanco, you know, laying down a bunt, or you know, Joaquin Arias, you know, hitting a grounder to move someone over, the Giants can do the little things to win games. And that's going to be a key for this club, because, you know, we can talk about the lack of power. We can talk about the great bullpens, the great starting pitching. But the fact is, you got to score runs. And, you know, Travis Ishikawa is not going to be hitting home runs all the time to win you ball games. So the Giants know they've got to do what they can do. And they should have success doing that, for what it's worth. They have the only thing they really lack, Rick, is what the Royals have in spades, and that is the ability to steal bases. Pagan is their big threat at the top of the order, and as we've noted, he's not available because of a back issue that required surgery. So the only way the Giants really can't beat you is by stealing bases, but they do have a good base-running team on the other side of that.
Absolutely, and as we start to bring it full circle here, there are a couple of very excellent points that you made. As far as it goes with Bruce Bochy, again, if you look at the Mount Rushmore of modern managers here, Cox, La Russa, Torrey, Bochy, 17 of the last 24 years, at least one of them has been in the World Series. And actually, when Torrey was going head-to-head with a few of these guys, sometimes it was two of them. So it's remarkable what they've been able to do collectively. And as you noted in your very fine article, Bochy certainly is clinching a place for himself in the Hall of Fame with this run. There's no doubt about that. But that's one of the things that I wonder about as far as how they match up to Kansas City, because under normal circumstances, you would think to yourself, if the Royals stay hot with what they're able to do, the other team is just going to finish the job for them by letting the Royals get in their heads. You could sense a little bit of that with Baltimore, and I kind of guessed that going in. But the reason that I picked the Giants, I saw that you and I coincided on our predictions of the Giants in six, and I wonder if it was at all for the same reason that I came to the conclusion was, the Giants seem like the one team that would be immune to that part of it, don't they? You're not going to get in their heads. They're sort of the consummate October Terminators at this point. There's nothing they really haven't seen, even if stylistically this is going to be something that they technically haven't seen in the postseason before. Is it the ability for them to just stay calm and to just battle through the adversity? Is that something you see as being decisive and coming from the top with Bruce Bochy?
You know, it's very hard to quantify that, like as a, you know, using sabermetrics or analysis. It's like, well, we're kind of in the realm of psychology. And so I will admit up the top that, I don't really know. But if I had to state my opinion there, I would agree exactly with what you did say there, Rick. You know, there's one thing. We can talk about, you know, experience of the managers. And, okay, Bruce Bochy wins that battle. We can talk about the experience of the teams. Well, 85 was the last time the Royals made the playoffs, so we know which way that goes, too. It obviously favors the Giants. But you look at the Giants, and I think that what we can say, and this goes back to the talk about Madison Bumgarner and Posey, and, you know, even guys like Lincecum and Kane that aren't contributing, they're still there. the Giants have a core of players that have been through this. And even the players they've added, I mean, a guy like Mike Morris hasn't been here before, but he's an established big league player. You know, he knows what he's doing. The support players like Gregor Blanco, he's been there. He's been called on before to step up when the Giants have had injuries in the playoffs. So the Giants do have that to fall back on. They've got Bumgarner, they've got Kane, they've got Posey, and even Hunter Pence, who's an excitable guy. All of these guys are very stable people. They're very, you know, if you don't know if they just went 2-for-4 or if they went 0-for-4. And I think that is a huge benefit when you can keep calm, you can keep your head about you, and if you've got the confidence and the security that you know what you're doing because of the past experiences you have had, it can't do anything but help.
Absolutely. You know, and if there is another victory parade this year, maybe that's what the T-shirts should say, right? Keep calm and win the World Series, because that's all San Francisco tends to do in October in even-numbered years. You know, it's sort of Team Brett Saberhagen against Brett Saberhagen's old team, which is kind of uncanny here. The Giants are just like clockwork every other year. But last thing I want to ask you about, you mentioned about the Royals in 85. This is sort of a more abstract question, but I thought it might be fun to ask it of you. Of course, the 80s are remembered as being a big decade of parity, as is the last decade. But then if you go back to the 40s, and I researched this, it really seems to be almost like clockwork. Every other decade, you see teams that go on big runs, not necessarily always the same team, but a few of them. You had the Braves and the Yankees in the 90s. You have the Giants and the Cardinals in this decade. In the 2020s, it's going to be wide open again by that definition. But what do you think accounts for this? Is it just a matter of teams sort of readjusting to the landscape with whatever's going on? You had free agency in the 70s. It took a while for teams to get their arms around that. You had the steroids era of the 90s and the 2000s, and then the post-steroids era. Is it just a matter of adjusting to the changes that keep coming in baseball, or do you have any kind of a sense at all of why this keeps happening?
Well, I think if we go far enough back, you know, we're talking early 1900s or whatever, there were less teams. You know, the game hadn't been integrated or anything like that. There was no free agency. The players were basically slaves to the owners. So, you know, like the Yankees as an example, they got a couple of good guys, and then they got a couple of more good guys, and then that's the ballgame. And then for a decade, it was that. And then everyone now, they want to go to the Yankees, and the Yankees have the money. So then they got a decade beyond that, and then a decade beyond that. So if we're going back far enough, I think that it's pretty clear why some of the dynasties or some of the teams had the groupings. But as we get toward more of the modern game, and especially with Curt Flood and free agency that you referenced there, Rick, that's interesting. You know, you look at the Athletics in the 70s, and they could have been one of those teams that we would still be talking about. Now, they won 3 straight World Series, so there's plenty to talk about there. But, you know, Charlie Finley blew that team up. You know, they could have been the team in baseball for the entire 70s. You know, we get into the 80s, and then, you know, the Braves, or 80s and 90s, the Braves are winning all these games, but they can't break through. You know, they can't win the World Series, can't do all that. Then it's the Yankees, you know, then it's the Giants. I think that the biggest key is having good management in place and then staying healthy. And that sounds, you know, stupid, but think about this with the Giants, who are in the series, obviously. Their number one pitcher, Matt Cain, is done for the year. Their number three, four pitcher, Tim Lincecum, hasn't done anything in the playoffs. And Pagan, who's their starter at center field and their leadoff guy, is out. And most teams, like if that had happened to the Giants in August, they wouldn't have made the playoffs. You know, they wouldn't have had enough juice to get there. So I think that the health is the biggest issue with these players, and with pitching being the way it is today and seemingly every third guy having Tommy John surgery, I mean, that Matt Harvey is a perfect example. It's like he goes down and that's 2 years the Mets are screwed. There's nothing they can do about it. So having a good ownership group in place that has a vision, has a plan, and understands the need to augment veterans with young veterans or younger players, but it really comes down to the health of the teams, I think, Rick.
Well, and absolutely. At its most elemental level, all of these organizations are strong. And again, for the Giants, who lead the National League in pennants over the course of time, I mean, there's no continuity between what they did in 87 and 89 when they made the playoffs and what they're doing now. So maybe it's just a coincidence that certain organizations tend to be magnets for attracting strong managerial teams. But yeah, it keeps happening. As you said, with the Yankees, that's been pretty much the case with them from the 1920s onward. Last stat that I want to drop on you, this is a real weird one. When we talk about the decades and how it's gone, this is one of the strangest ones I've ever come across. The Royals and the Orioles, this was 13 of the 17 years between 69 and 85. One of them was in the ALCS. but they never met there. How does something like that happen, Ray?
I love it. I write an article every year at the start of the season, Did You Know? And I always find interesting tidbits like that. And some people just, but for me, that stuff's fascinating. I don't know. I have no answer. I've got a more recent one for you, Rick. My co-host on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, Kyle Ulfrink, and I have been on the station since day one, and the station's in its fifth year now. Every year that we've been on the show, I live in San Francisco, Kyle lives in St. Louis. Every year, one of our teams has been in the World Series. So I think it's just, you know, it's happenstance. These things go together, and it makes for fun, and I love this information, but I don't know if anyone's ever going to be able to put a handle on it.
Yeah, I don't know, but that's, again, that gives you bragging rights, though, because, again, taking a strong, strong, strong stand for being team of the decade here with putting away the Cardinals a second time, and if the Giants finish it off, I think we can award it to them halfway through the decade, because I don't see anybody topping that at this point, 3 World Series in 5 years, and again, that's your pick and my pick, and again, as I knew it would be in terms of predictions, it didn't take an Einstein to know that this was going to be a great conversation with you today, and clearly it delivered, and we got to do this certainly more often, especially since the last one was so many years ago. That's a no-brainer to say we got to do it more often, but substantively, yeah, I look forward to making that happen with you, and again, like I said, so proud of all of your success on SiriusXM, everything that you've got going on over there, everything at FantasyAlarm.com and the Baseball Guys subsite there. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. I truly say that and mean that sincerely. Thank you so much, Ray Flowers, for being on today. You're a good friend. You're a great analyst, and it was just awesome to get to do this with you.
Mutual Admiration Society here, Rick. Thank you again for the opportunity today. Happy to come back on in the future and talk with you. And thanks again for helping to start me on the path that led to, 15 years of a dream right now, Rick.
Oh, thanks so much. And again, it's just so good to hear about all the good things happening with you. And I am so thrilled. And again, a pleasure to do this today. We'll look forward to doing this again here at some point in the near future. Thank you so much. And thank you all, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 480.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.